Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Mana on the Rocks. It is I, the hostess with the mostest, Jostess. Joining me this week's Atlas-tess.
You almost got there, but hello, everybody.
Got there. This week on the podcast, we do another viewer suggestion. We talk about ye olde rock, paper, scissors of CEDH, stacks, mid-range, turbo. And we kind of devolve into meta discussion as this conversation generally brings it in. We also get crazy for like 3 minutes in the entire runtime of this. Something like that. We go off the rails. Today was a wild day in terms of Magic news. But speaking of Magic news,
Atlas, what do the people have to know if they want to survive this oncoming winter of Marvel cards and Magic the Gathering?
First and foremost, the upcoming OCCS, Gabby's Olympic Cards and Comics, is coming up on November 4th. It's a 10 proxy tournament. We'll be both be there playing our little Magic hearts out. So come jam a game with us, play in the tournament. It's going to be a blast. There's going to be a lot of really highly skilled players there. I keep getting like heads ups from more and more people who say they're going to be showing up. So I think the event caps at something like 60 players, 64 players, something like that. So go ahead and sign up. It's a $35 entry fee. It's a lot of fun. And we'll look forward to playing with you at that one.
10 card proxy shortly, limit.
It's a 10 card proxy limit. Yeah. And then, 2 weeks after that, so 4 weeks from now, we have the RCs, the regional championships for the Pacific Northwest area. This is being put on by PDX, tournament organizing group. They're working with CEDH tournament organizing group as well. It's going to be a 100 player limit in Graham, Washington. It's going to be just an absolute just fistful of really, really good CEDH players there. Really excited to play in that event, and hopefully a bunch of you will as well. It's a $60 entry fee, 100% proxy legal. It's going to be super, super fun. It's also, if the rumors are true, this is going to be part of the new Top Deck GG like tournament series that Eminence has been setting up. It's going to be part of the qualifier circuit. So that's the other big news, is that Eminence has announced a qualifier circuit for their national tournaments. And all of these events are going to be held all across the country. You'll be able to play in them, and then you'll earn some points. And then players with the most points will qualify at the end of next year. It's going to be a 10-month circuit. So at the end of next August, players with the most points will qualify to be invited to Eminence's national event. And they will they'll be playing for, I think it's like a 15K prize pool.
Damn.
So it's going to be a massive, massive tournament full of just like literally the best players in the country. So hopefully you all show up to this circuit event here, which is going to be our Pacific Northwest Regional Championships. It's going to be a lot of fun. You'll be able to start earning your points for that Eminence event, which will be super cool. And I'm looking forward to competing in a bunch of those in the coming year and seeing a bunch of you compete there as well.
Starting to rub shoulders with the best of them. You should start rubbing your shoulders down here at Mana on the Rocks Bar.
But before we go down and get a drink, I want to do the shout out for this week. Shout out to John for being a patron. Love you, buddy. Appreciate you. Come on over. Get a drink with us.
Do you actually think that CDH is like rock, paper, scissors, actually?
I think it can be. I think it probably was more so towards the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's probably less rock, paper, scissory now and more of just like... I mean, I guess it kind of is, but I don't think it's archetypal, right? I think it's more like fast start versus it's like turbo versus mid-range, but mid-range is representing both rock and paper.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, turbo scissors, and mid-range is just representing two ends, where it's like they get the stop to the early win, or they don't get the stop to the early win. And turbo is trying to like just trying to get there, like faster than whatever mid-range can adapt to stop, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think mid-range, it doesn't The thing with mid-range is it doesn't excel into, like, any one of, like, the usual, like, categories for, like, a competitive card game, right? That's, like, its whole deal is it's able to kind of shift its role to whatever, so you get that level of, like, flexibility and whatnot. Whereas, like, a true, like, stacks list or a true, like, control list, for example, like, you're not really doing either of those things. I do think it's correct, because I was thinking about, like, okay, well, like, aggro, you know, beats up control in the early game, but it's like, well, every deck is kind of like aggro to some degree, and everyone's packing as much interaction as they possibly can, realistically. You know, everyone's got value engines, everyone's got game plans on game plans, so, yeah, I think, as I've thought about those ideas, I've definitely shied away from, like, the broad stroke pillars of, like, this is a combo deck, this is a mid-range list, you know?
Yeah, I definitely get that.
Mm-hmm. Because it's, I mean, look at your list, for example. Like, you call Kenrith a control list. You say that you're a Drago control player. You can still win on turn two. Not frequently, not often are you seeking that hand out. I feel like a decent percentage of the time you're taking that hand that you're given, but that's not, I wouldn't say that your deck looks to turn two often, or to, like, turn three often.
I mean, Dockside's a hell of a card.
Dockside's
the only way that you can
get it. Yeah, exactly. But, like, even still, like, remove that from the situation. Like, if your deck is Thoracle Consult, like, you are going to see a percentage of your hands that are just, oh, this just does the combo on turn three.
Even if you're in a mid-range.
Even if I am playing blue-black stacks, I am looking to make the game go very artificially long with the other choices in my list, there is a percentage time that I'm going to see Thoracle Consult or Thoracle Tainted Pack hands and just go, cool, I'm going to try and win on turn two. And that...
Blue-black stacks, that's the deck I want to hear.
Blue-black stacks. I mean, like, literally just run all, like, the colorless hate pieces, right? Like, that's... And, like, counter magic, I guess. Probably something. But, like, right? Like, that's... I feel like that whole idea, you start to break down the idea of, like, what is a this deck, what is a that deck, and we enter the nebulous zone, where every deck's sort of everything sometimes, but not all the time. But it has an identity, but not, like, fully an identity, because it's very mulligan-dependent, and your mulligan is way more valuable in CDH versus other formats, because the texture of your hand changes so drastically from hand to hand.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that on the whole. I think that lists that have a defined identity, you will see less of that fluctuation.
Mm-hmm.
I think that decks, like, obviously sometimes you'll see just, like, the god hand or whatever, whether that's a turn two Thoracle or whatever. But I think that a lot of times, like, once your deck has an identity, once it knows what it wants, like, those mulligans, I think the texture tends to vary less, even if the cards are still a little bit volatile just because of, like, the nature of the format being 100 card singleton. I think it'll definitely be less like, oh, this hand goes really fast, that's absolutely crazy. But, like, I'm missing one land, so it's not playable. Let me mulligan again. Oh, wow, this hand is going to be nothing but, like, interaction, so it's still not playable. Like, you will see those, but both of those hands were unplayable. I think as you start to look for just, like, solidly good hands, I think the decks tend to stabilize a little bit in their mulligan decisions. That's just been my experience, at least. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just because of, like, the style of list that I play. But I think that once you figure out what your deck is trying to do, like, as the game plan, like, just mulliganing for solidly good hands that will move you towards that game plan, it's okay to go, like, five or sometimes four even, as long as the cards, you know, the cards you're selecting are going to get you towards that end goal.
They do something.
As opposed to just saying, like, oh, I'm going to win the game really hard, or I'm going to slow down the game really hard. Like, knowing, and part of that too, at least from my perspective, has to do with, like, mulliganing contextually to your pod.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think from my perspective, at least, that helps smooth stuff out and makes it so that you're playing less rock, paper, scissors with your own deck and more just, like, trying to kind of trying to evaluate the role of what your list is and trying to just like in that pod and just keep that solid, strong hand.
I think that approach makes a lot more sense when you're able to step away from the, oh, I'm mono red aggro against blue black control. I've figured out who the beatdown is, like figuring out like, I guess almost like beatdown in sequence, if that makes sense. Like if I'm up against Rog'Sai, I know I'm not going to go faster than Rog'Sai. Just straight up, they're going to zoom faster than me because that is their entire game. My goal in that instance is to, when I'm looking at a hand, sitting down against a very fast aggro deck, is I'm looking to maybe interact with them at some point, but realistically, I'm just trying to live. I'm trying to stick something that'll get me value past this moment, and then we figure it out from there. And I think that style of thinking is very different to, like you said, like that's just an example of like how I view a pod. You know, you start to assign those roles to things and whatnot. It continues to amaze and wonder me that like it's such a different style of playing the game, of approaching the game. It's almost like you're like games 2 and 3 in like a 1v1 situation where everyone's technically already sideboarded. You kind of have a rough idea of what everybody's on if you have like base level understanding of the format, and you just figure out your hands from there. And
that's actually a really good way of putting it.
Yeah, and like you start, and that's where you start bleeding into the edges of like, well, yeah, I'm mid-range, but like I'm not really trying to be the best mid-range deck. I'm just trying to like either like, oh, my seat position or my pod composition lends in such a way where I'm gonna be more rewarded if I go faster versus, oh, I'm gonna be better off if I can like hide behind someone for a turn or two. Or if I can like align myself with like who should be the quote unquote control player of the pod. Is there a control player of the pod, you know? Because like again, like every pod is gonna be so uniquely different that it's hard. I'm glad that we're at a point where we're kind of out of the rock, paper, scissors mentality. You know,
I think it's healthy, but it's also not healthy, right?
Yeah,
because a lot of
the
reason we're out of the rock, paper, scissors idea is that as decks homogenize and become like just these increasingly good, like 4 and 5 color piles, the uniqueness of strategies and different identities kind of start to blur together,
mm-hmm.
and that's kind of why we're here, I think. So it's
a
like
a little bit, yeah,
because no longer is like, sure, mono red turbo like goes fast, but like
so does every other
now we're close to, so does every other fast deck, and you can play a fast deck that's 4 and 5 colors so that it can also just draw cards. I mean, blue farm, right? Mm-hmm. That's a great example of fast deck blurring with like more mid-rangey grindy deck. You can also look at something like Tivit, which is like a fast deck merging with kind of like a more control heavy, like stacksier deck.
Mm-hmm.
Because that deck can go very, very fast. But that deck can also just like throw down a Graft Digger's Cage or a Curse Totem or whatever have you.
And then cast
just
a Tivit.
Hit you with a 6-6.
Yeah, just cast a Tivit. I'm not doing anything unless I'm poked. Like, this is the game plan that I'm on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's so like it is healthy, but it's also not. I also really liked your analogy of like sitting down and evaluating the other decks, kind of like we already now know we're playing games 2 and 3 right now, because game 1 was like from 60 card formats, a lot of just figuring out what your opponent's on, if there's anything
that's,
quirky
that's
about
the,
their
that's
list.
That's the whole game 1 right there.
Yeah, and then and so because like the core because of that is just kind of like take a good hand, like the best hand you can get without going low. And just like try best you can to win whatever the game is. But you don't have to worry about playing game 1 because when you see people's commanders, that is game 1.
Mm-hmm.
At least,
it
like
is.
You said, with
it
a base
is.
Level knowledge.
Yeah. Like if you have a base understanding of like, okay, Blue Farm is looking to just draw a million cards. Winota is looking to stack the board out. You know, like if you can pull these like base level ideas, like from there you're going, okay, like I'm up against Rocco, I'm gonna try my best to find opposition agent or a hand that like kills creatures a lot of the time. Like that's and that level of idea, you know, or like if you're in games 2 or 3 against like Affinity, for example, and you are correct and put Artifact Hate in your sideboard,
You're looking to Mulligan for those things because you know that these are tools that are going to help improve you on the matchup, but you're not like necessarily like it may or may not be your role at the table to be the person to deal with that, but I think it's important to at least have a hand, or you take the gamble and you go, okay, they can't get there. I'm going to try and get there after them. And that's where the CEDH gets fun. That's where it gets interesting. That's when we start moving on to like the crazy shit, right? I forget who I was talking to about this, but someone had asked me what like the worst color in Commander is. And I think I straight up told them there isn't. Like, ideally, everyone, or this is kind of like the worst case scenario. Everyone is playing five color Kenrith pile. Like, not like cause straight up, or like a five color commander that does like something that is like a couple cards different from each other because your commander lends itself to this, that, or the other. Or your playstyle is this, that, and that. Where like you're not punished for these things. Like you said, like, yeah, mono red aggro can go really, really fast. Blue form also goes really fast. Five color, like Turbo Nuzzle, Cody goes really fast, you know? Remember Cody?
I'm sure we can talk about that deck in the same breath as other decks that...
That's true. That's true.
...do things.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, that deck does one thing very, very well. Die to a removal spell on cast of Cody. It's very, very good at that. I do.
It is very good at that.
But, like, you get so much from adding each of the colors that, like... Certain decks are going to gain slightly more things from... You're always going to gain more from adding colors. You're never going to be like, oh, no, I'm going to drop... I think it's a better idea to drop a color in my color identity because the payoff for having these extra slots available is so much better than just, I'm adding black now. I get to play all the tutors, right?
Yeah.
That's, I think, where a lot of... I don't know, because I look at something like Vintage, for example, and there are more than like four decks in Vintage, right? And that's the fastest Magic gets, quote unquote, right? I'm not wrong for thinking Vintage is the fastest format.
I definitely wouldn't disagree with that. Any format where Lotus and the Mox nerf,
yeah,
like straight up legal.
Yeah, like you like that is where all like every busted thing is, and that is where you're not playing Magic the Gathering. You're playing a different hybrid game of like every other card game where everyone's like, if you're not doing something to lock your opponent out of the game or win immediately, you're not playing the game.
Yeah, and you have to be doing it in like turn one or two.
Yeah, but even still, like you... And I'm really only thinking about this because Playing with Power put out a Vintage video, and I think Vintage is really, really interesting. I've always thought Vintage was interesting. But like, you can play a bug deck. You can play like four color Deathrite Shaman control because you have the pieces for it, but you have to skew a lot of your pieces, obviously, but... You have all ends of the spectrum in Vintage, where like you can have a deck like Shops that is all colorless, and then you can have like this multicolor pile of just good cards, and there's a lot of different strategies in between. And I guess where that gets different is Commander. You have your eighth or ninth card in your hand, kind of always available to you, all of the command zone, and you're more or less incentivized for adding colors.
Yeah, especially at this point where like. A lot of the cards that are printed, and everyone says this is like such a negative thing because they print a lot of commanders, they give you colors, you can play all the cards, mm-hmm. and homogenizing piles and whatnot. And I agree that there are definitely drawbacks to having these really strong commanders that are generically good, that allow you to play kind of whatever you want. But at the same time, they also kind of allow you to play whatever you want.
Yeah, it's the double-edged sword.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, I guess, like, realistically, if it was a concern where people wanted to see stronger or at least new and more engaging commanders printed into higher color identities, like three or four again, and every once in a while it's okay to release a really strong five-color commander because it shakes things up a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. Five colors to say was a really it's a really cool deck, and it just keeps getting more powerful. Kenrith is really strong on release. Everyone's like, "Oh, this card's just like super like vanilla good."
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what you think it does on the tin.
Yeah, Najeela very very strong, combos with everything. Like it's okay. We've gone like about like a year now, at least. Like, it's a, it would be okay to, like, if we, they want to print another really good five color commander, they can. Like, they could release something from like another set or two from now that's just like really powerful, right? Maybe it, Marvel. Marvel's upcoming.
The Marvel set's coming.
Infinity Gauntlet's gonna be the commander, and because it's gonna be a legendary equipment that's all five colors, they could be your commander, and things are gonna devolve.
I'm gonna use my Infinity Gauntlet to tutor out my One Ring. Pay for the League of Legends Rhystic Study trigger, by the way.
Yeah, something along those lines. It's memes aside, I think that like it's okay to print those really powerful cards. If they wanted to like regulate things in a way that like forced people to sort of like keep an eye on things, they could take like things that aren't legal or like new strategies and like trying to remember old strategies and stuff. They could take like a little bit of a cue from Yu-Gi-Oh or whatever, where they like rotate all commanders. Like once we get to the point where they're like probably 3 to 5 like solid commanders in each of the four colors and a number of like strong five color commanders, they could like put them on a rotating ban list. Like, okay, this year Thrasios is not legal.
That'd be cool.
Like Thrasios is straight up banned, but then like the other like really strong Simic partner commander would be legal for that year. And then, or like the other two Simic partner commanders or whatever.
Yo, Pydell, it's her time.
It's her time. She's not the one I was thinking of. It's the one that doesn't exist yet. Okay. But it's just things to push the community to develop a little bit more, I think would be kind of interesting. But we're getting off topic.
Let's bring it back to topic. Do you think that it does need to develop faster or like more? I mean, like, the thing with an Eternal format is it's always going to develop in some form of fashion. I think there's still a substantial amount of like time and room left in CDH that I'm not worried about, like, barring something crazy and up like world ending, like think Flash style of like
Thanos.
Oh noes. Barring something like that, I think CDH is still going to continue to develop and whatnot. I mean, like, I think a lot of the talk last year was like, oh, like, you know, mid-range summer, you know, like Stax winter, like something like that. We're like, oh, okay, we're gonna start to see these like kind of repeated steps through it, but we're really not at this point.
Yeah, and that's just because of like the card quality of mid-range, what people call mid-range pieces.
And like I remember joking a lot about like the mid-range singularity. We're all gonna get pulled towards the mid-range singularity. I still like kinda hold true to that idea. I think it's still correct to some degree. I think the payoff for slowing your gameplay down a little bit, and just taking a lot, like just a little bit off your top end, just add a little bit of resiliency, add a little bit more like longevity, is like substantially better than trying to go under everybody. And I think that's where we started to see the breakdown, the rock, paper, scissors, is like a lot of people going, yeah, like I can try and stop you, or I can just play this Rhystic Study. Good luck storming, by the way. I have Odawara. Yeah, I think you're right. I think with the printing of a lot of like different cards, like Bone Masters, One Ring, the channel lands, the whole like channel like interaction suite in its entirety, I think changes a lot of different things. Because before you, oops, sorry, go for it.
You can finish your thought.
Where like before you had to account for Force of Will, Force of Negation, Pact of Negation, like three free pieces of counter magic. Now you have to worry about Solitude, you have to worry about Endurance, you have to worry about, like, I guess SWAT was also in the conversation at that point too. You know, you have to worry about like how much mana do you have available? Can you Odawara? Can you Besage you? You know, like these kinds of things.
They're really challenging to interact with, low cost, permanent stylish interaction things.
Yeah. The everything you want in a bag of chips on your removal spell or your piece of interaction.
I was going to say, I think I'm thinking about it right now, and I think that I don't think we've completely abandoned the rock, paper, scissors world, but I do think that it's going to take something new to be printed, which, like you said, it's one of the bones of Eternal formats. It's like there's a lot of time and space for stuff to develop. Things can get printed and shift things around, but like one of the reasons that Turbo is really, really strong for a while is because Ad Nauseam was just kind of the most efficient thing to be doing as the format got super streamlined. And once people started deciding that, well, I don't want to play this card, or I'm seeing a lot of it, like, how do I beat it? That's when we started to see sort of like stacks rise up a little bit. And then with the rise of stacks, everyone's like, okay, well, let's play solid grind cards so I can get through like
play through the stacks, of law,
hell. And from that, it just sort of like became really inefficient to play stacks into all the mid-range cards, and especially inefficient to play all of the stacks pieces to beat the turbo lists and then lose to the mid-range lists, when the mid-range lists were also playing cards that hosed up and stopped the turbo lists. Mm-hmm. Where just like some mid-range decks, yeah, they're just playing a Manglehorn now, or they'll just play like Bowmaster's gonna really hurt their early Heuristic Study, or somebody's thrown a Dothi Voidwalker into play because it's a great card. Like, they aren't even on a stacks deck, but like, I'm playing black and this card's really strong, and so I'm just gonna hose your breach line incidentally, and then take your best card when I need it. Those types of things. But that's not to say that Turbo's necessarily dead. Like, obviously there are still very fast lists that can win games effectively right now, especially that's even pushed further on pilot skill. But like, I don't think we're gonna see a lot of like pushes towards, oh, I need to be building turbo, I need to go faster than everyone, I need to like beat them via like the speed and power of this particular card, because the most powerful card in the format right now, as we never cease to say, is the One Ring.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. But that card, mark it off on your bingo card. We mentioned it this episode again.
Here it is.
Yep, here it is. Format, we mentioned the One Ring.
Truly, let's format go. Defining.
It's ruined the game.
Honestly, quarterly ban is incoming. Might as well sell those off now.
Yeah. No. They're gonna. We're gonna get the Commander BNR, and they're gonna tell us about a new booster pack.
Honestly, yeah, the new Commander series booster. There will be four legendaries in every pack. Two of them will be uncommons. One of them will be a rare, and then you'll have a chance at either an uncommon or a rare. Everything else will be probably playable, but it'll help your draft experience.
Yeah, there's also going to be one card that's only going to be printed in that set, and it's also from another IP, so we realistically don't have the legal rights for it. And like, we'll maybe get around to printing like an in-universe version, but like at that point, like it's like 3 years past, and we've already printed a lot of other cards that are like basically unaccounted for at this time. We've sort of created the new reserve list, by the way. I'm sorry, just got thrown into a time vortex.
Tangent. no, but like, so the ring is, but the thing about the ring, right, is like, it's the most powerful card, the best thing you can be doing, basically, but it's slow.
It's very slow.
It's very slow. Like, it takes probably three turns to have like a serious, serious impact on the game. Unless the protection was for some reason like critical on the turn it came down.
Yeah.
Or if you're able to abuse untaps, but most decks that are playing it, because most decks aren't untapping artifacts, most decks can't abuse that. So it takes probably about, I would estimate about three turns to become like super relevant, but it's so hard to remove that those three turns will probably happen based on the current metagame. Right, it's slower. People are playing stacks and control stuff, and so it's gonna be a grind fest, and you're gonna get through there those three turns, and then you're gonna hit turn four, and all of a sudden, like, the corner is turned, as people say, and you're gonna have now drawing four cards for free off that. So you've seen five cards this turn. Blah 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 blah. But the tricky thing is that like once some new card gets printed that says like whether it's a faster card, like maybe it's something akin to Pyr, where it's like heavy mana cost, but like it's not impossible to cast, and so like all this ritual mana is like super good to push it into play early. We just want to tutor this card and cast as fast as possible, and that becomes the new thing for tutor lists to do. As long as it's strong enough to be in contention with the One Ring, then
we'll probably start seeing the next shift.
Yeah, I think so. Like, then we'll be moving back into like, okay, well, now Turbo can get in under midrange again, which means that then Stax has to either get new pieces printed or revisit old tech and find some old Stax pieces that it wasn't or hasn't been playing in order to beat whatever this new threat is. And then as Stax becomes more dominant, we'll see mid-range push in again, because the One Ring will grind through it, or some other like crazy piece that gets printed.
Or like you had to take out the pieces to fight the previous thing that you were like losing to and worried about. And so you have now paradoxically made space for that card to come in because you weren't respecting it enough.
Exactly, because we're on game two now. People have sideboarded.
Exactly, yeah. No, we are... I am playing Skyclave Apparition now on my list because... Not because it answers the One Ring, but it incidentally does, and that makes me feel very good about including the card in my list.
Yeah, and that's always going to be a selling point right now.
And that I think... We're starting to enter the flexibility era of an Eternal format, where we are going to have, you know, we're going to have card of the month after card of the month, for lack of a better term. One Ring is our card of the month, where this is the game plan, this is what everybody's doing, and we need to have tools and ways to deal with the One Ring, but also we want those tools and things to not be squarely targeted at the One Ring. We want that net to be just a little bit wider, make the playability just a little bit more. You know, the 2 mana for that removal spell, we're safe to bump it to 3 because it also means we get to hit the One Ring now. Like that style of thinking, where because those threats are going to be essentially ever present for as long as they're legal in the format, our answers need to get wider. Our game plans need to become more flexible. I still think a lot of decks are going to play with that kind of like gameplay mindset, gameplay and mentality. Yeah, I think mentality is the word I'm looking for, of like Stax, Turbo, Midrange. But it's instead of filing to that point in each of those triangles, we're rounding those corners a little bit, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And I think that it raises a really good point of like, I like the idea of like the flexibility era, because we've seen it before with Thoracle, right? Like Thoracle comes out and it's the best thing to be doing. Strict upgrade to Lab Man as far as everyone's concerned.
Win the game in a
game. It's really hard. Yeah, it's really hard to beat that card. No one's like confident of like a strong strategy. So it takes a little while. Basically, people like start teching Angel's Grace or like weird things to stop it. Maybe like see some more Torpor effects.
Narrow answer for it.
Yeah. But then like we see, oh, and as once again, as cards get printed, it's easier to tech for stuff. But we see like, oh, well, like mono white, like Ablation does answer Thoracle because it kills the Thoracle player. That's a way to remove their trigger from the stack. Endurance is a hell of a card. Let's play that. Oh, we can play Endurance. We can play Memory's Journey. We can play Turn the Earth. Like, and then people start to see things. Oh, this card answers that. Oh, that card answers that. Oh, I didn't see that card before, but like looking back now, that card is an answer.
This creature is typed well for my strategy, or like it fits right into my curve, or it also incidentally interacts with this thing, which is also a benefit.
Yes. Yeah. And so like I think we're gonna start seeing stuff like that. So like Skyclave Apparition is a really good example. I think something like Oko is another really good example where like it answers the One Ring because it can elk the ring, but also it's a really strong answer to strategies like Sasan Kinnan that are super duper present right now. So things like that make cards like Oko really, really powerful here.
Mm-hmm.
And so like it's sorcery speed. It's 3 mana. It can be countered easily on the way down, and then it's like its ability could be swatted or whatever. But it has like
applications outside. You don't feel good about swatting it ever.
It has applications outside of just like hitting just this thing or just that thing. It answers a broad swath of like the most problematic stuff right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think that's I think that that's a really good point. I'm just really interested to see what like the next
shifter thing is. Yeah.
Because, like, and it probably won't be immediate either. It might take a little while for it to catch on. Probably like, mid-range will get too greedy. They'll be like, oh, we're going to play, like, this extra mid-range piece that's, like, just because it's so good. And so that's going to push us even further forwards because, like, we're so far ahead. And that's going to be just, like, the little bit of an eke that Turbo needs in order to get there and sort of, like, edge out wins faster than mid-range can do anything because they're playing one too many engines or whatever. Like, I feel like between Talion, the ring, study, all that stuff, one more engine that's like really good, that's when people have to make a decision. Otherwise, you're going to start running into the problem of my engine drew my engine, but now I have no response.
Yeah, like I've tapped out one too many times for this turn rotation, and now I'm going to get punished by it. Or I'm paying attention to the way that people are building decks now and like sequencing their plays and choosing their hands. That, like, yeah, dude, that's pretty cool that you landed Rhystic Study and the One Ring. Thoracle with you not having mana open? Like, that, and correct, that's exactly what's going to happen, is you're going to do exactly like you said. You're going to play one more value engine, and then Turbo's going to go, cool, we have the window. We are going to take the window, thank you, and move directly onward. So I think the Rock, Paper, Scissors is still alive, in a sense. The lines have just gotten blurry. And I think that's it's always gonna reach that route, I think. When you kind of look at the trajectory of things. Like, eternal format, busted stuff, what's the best thing we can start doing? Oh, this is the best thing we can start doing. Do we need to file every single duck in the row of this one game plan, or do we have the room and flexibility to diversify? Can we enter the flexibility era? And that's where we are. And then what comes after the flexibility era? Usually it's not fun, in my experience.
It's the next best turbo thing from Assassin's Creed IP.
I'm sorry. Turbo Assassin's Creed.
Bro, like, turn to Altair is the new strategy.
Yeah, I'm gonna leap into the haystack. You can't touch me. I have phased out.
His special player action of stealth with the crowd, stealth with the courtesans, means that you actually can't counter any of my effects this turn, and it triggers every time I go through my second upkeep, which occurs when I activate my Hidden Blade Leap of Faith mechanic that I can do by tapping this land.
Oh, I hate that this game is becoming Fortnite. Yeah, but like usually what happens after like everyone experiences, oh, we can be super flexible, is like usually something hard or fast ends up arriving from outside the scene, going, yep, you're gonna have to deal with us now. No more fun time. We are the threat now.
Yep.
Which is fine. I think that's all part of like the cycle of a format. You're gonna have an eternal format, or any sort of eternal format will see a new card enter in, or the meta shift just right to allow for something to come in and start centralizing. And once we start centralizing, that's the next card of the month. Welcome back to square one. How are you doing today? Did you bring your punch card? Like, you've been through this ride before. We readapt. We adapt. We overcome. We survive. And that's always the draw to the eternal format. At least to me, is like, new things are always going to be entering in. Very rarely are they going to make a splash. Sometimes when they make a splash, it's big. Other times, not so much. And I think we're just... Do you think we're seeing one too many big splashes? I don't think I personally am seeing that. Like, we're seeing big enough splashes, but it feels...
What do you think the biggest splash was recently?
I think the channel abilities, if I'm being, like, 100% honest. I think the channel abilities combined with the printing of the Modern Horizons 2 Elementals... It allows for more decks that are not in blue to have Force of Will. And I'm personally always of the opinion that every deck should be able to play a Force of Will in some capacity. Some amount of, like, gotcha-free interaction. That's kind of like the spice of old Magic, right? Is you get into Legacy, ooh, I get to start worrying about Force of Will. I get to start worrying about Daze. Like, all of these play patterns and things and ideas that you have to start accounting for that you previously weren't having to account for now have to start entering your regular calculus. Like, for as much shit as I will give the One Ring and the Bowmaster, they are telegraphed, they are planned around, they are expected. You can work around these things. It's a little bit harder when you know someone can have a Solitude in their hand.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really plan around Solitude all that
much. I'm using Solitude as an example here.
But, like, yeah, it's like, you could be on Besaidu, like, you have a green, but also it's a card, it's a land, like, mm-hmm. You're not tutoring for a Besaidu, probably. Yeah, it's one of those weird ones. It's like, you have to plan around it, but also sometimes you just don't because it's just besieged you.
Yeah, it's, and the percentages are so low because we're in singleton 100 card format that, like, statistically you're not going to get there too frequently unless you're specifically seeking it out, like you said. But, like, it's still, like, sometimes a consideration. Now, what do you think the biggest splash has been in recent times that it's kind of, like, forced shakeups, I guess?
The biggest splash into the format?
Yeah.
I think it's probably just been, like, the rise of, like, commanders with one-card combos that just, like, have become really, like, multicolor commanders, right? Because there's always been, like, Godo and, like, one-color commanders.
Like, Kinnan, stuff like that.
But, like, Kinnan popping up, like, all over the place. Tivit, like, a lot of cards like that that are just showing up where it's, like, this card just has, like, a crazy combo and it also gives you everything else.
Mm-hmm. So less of a card entering the game and more of, well, I guess partially a card entering game, but more just, like, format and community development then?
I guess. I'll make it easy. Tivit. Okay. I think Tivit is the biggest shakeup.
Okay, okay.
There's been a fat minute.
Yeah. Yeah, I... Yeah. I would... I Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Tivit gives you... Basically, because Tivit gives you everything Blue Farm does, but better. The only thing you lose is, like, the efficiency of Breach and Dockside Extortionist.
But you're playing clone effects in the 99 anyway, so you kind of have a Dockside if you time yourself right. Anyhow.
Yeah, it's just... And the fact that it doesn't... The combo for that card doesn't get hit by a lot. Even if it does, you still have a 6-6 with flying and effective hexproof that makes you mana and draws you cards. And your one-card combo only costs 2 mana, but you also get to play Thoracle still. You can play Mean Betrayal.
You get Intuition, like, Piles.
The best draw engines in the format. Force of Will, like, super effective counter magic. Protective spells with, like, Silence and Grand Abolisher because you're in white. Like, the card is just so certifiably nuts. It's ridiculous.
New Capenna was, like, 2 years ago at this point, right? Year and a half?
Eesh. Don't ask me that. I'm terrible with those time frames.
I think so, because it was start of the year, but it wasn't the start of this year, so it must have been the start of last year. Yeah. And what's funny is, like, Tivit took a minute to even get on the scene.
Oh, I remember when it was first spoiled, and a lot of the people on the CDH Reddit were like, oh, this card is terrible, it's unplayable. 6 mana? Like, I guess it has Hexproof and a one-card combo with Time Sieve, but
it's,
like,
6
you're
mana.
Basically, people were saying you're basically just playing Thopter Foundry in the command zone. Why would you try and make this work? It's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw it and I was like, I don't know. It has a one-card combo in the command zone, makes you mana, draws you cards. It seems pretty good to me. And of course, I didn't really pursue. I worked on it a little bit with one of my friends, but like, we didn't pursue it super duper deep because they were more interested in playing other decks at the time. But and I had no interest in playing Tivit. And then lo and behold, it wins, like, one major event by a content creator put it together, and oh my god, all of a sudden this card is cracked and you see it literally everywhere. And everyone's like, wow, maybe this card is insane because a content creator, like, played with it and did well. And then, like, other people start putting together similar builds and oh my god, it's actually, like, really good. That's wild. And it just, once again, the community is just so frustrating. Like, don't call cards bad just because you don't think they're good.
I don't know.
Am I guilty of doing this as well? Absolutely. But, like, just on the whole, we should not, like, just shoot down a card just because we don't think it can work. It should be that challenge effect. Like, I don't think this card is good, but if you can make it work, show me, because I'd love to see it.
And I think you're definitely agree on a lot of your fronts. But one of the big things, and this kind of pulling back from an earlier point, is Tivit's really good with a lot of different hands that you're going to see. Like, it's capable of, like, oh, this hand makes a lot of mana. I guess I just cast a Tivit and then, like, figure it out from there. And then I have a Tivit. But then, like, oh, I can keep the control hand and then just later on land a Tivit. Or, oh, cool, I have Time Sieve in my hand, or, like, a route to Time Sieve. I'm just going to do that this game.
We're just going to jam a Tivit.
Yeah, we're just going to jam a Tivit. Like,
play a Time Sieve and try and win
the game. Yeah, like, its hands are so good because it's able to just
it's able to do the casual thing of like lands and spells. Yep, these are all pretty good. Am I dying turn 1-2? Nope. Okay, cool. We're good.
Yeah.
It can just take whatever you want to, or if you really want to get aggressive with your mulligans for like
super adaptable, yeah. Very strong.
Which I think in that regard, Tivit's probably the poster child for the flexibility era. Because it kind of just does whatever it wants. I don't know. Do you Yeah. Do you think decks should be allowed to do whatever they want? Do you think that's more conducive to a better environment? I think that's a better question.
Like, do I think that decks should be allowed, like, do I think that players should allow decks to run unchecked, or do I think that lists should be able to be constructed to do everything?
Lists should be constructed to be able to do everything a la Tivit. Whereas, like, I think Tivit's able to do anything because it's able to take a lot of different hands that it gets, very drastically different hands, and still have, like, it's kind of at like the crux of this argument where it's like, oh, turbo decks, mid-range decks, and stack decks are all going to have different hands and have like their own specific hands that they're looking for their game plans. And then Tivit comes through and kind of shatters that whole illusion. It does everything. If it's every single part of the pie chart, do you think that's a good thing?
Yeah, I actually do. I think that's like totally fine for the format. I think it's really healthy. I think it allows decks to pivot into different roles based upon kind of like what the pod looks like, but also they can be constructed differently based upon what the controller wants to do, mm-hmm. like pre-game. Because I think there are a couple different ways to build Tivit, and different versions have different successes with different players. And I think that's a really positive, really healthy thing. The thing that I don't like about Tivit is Ward 3. I think that it shouldn't be impossible to answer.
Oh yeah.
Decks.
No, that's that part of the text is absurd.
I think we can make it a little bit more broad than that, and we can sort of aim to create a more solid understanding of like what the problem is with cards like this, because people, I think a lot of players will agree that Tivit is kind of like, not that it even deserves to be considered for a ban, but it's like, it's a little bit of an issue when it, whereas in like, it's just like so strong.
I think
all in one card.
I think,
but
go for it.
Oh, I was going to say, but I think the criteria there that we're looking at isn't that Tivit's so strong for one card. I think the criteria that we're looking at that makes it an issue is it's so strong for one card and it can't be answered. And I think there's I can go a little further. I think there's a couple different ways to look at cards and say they can't be answered. So we're like Tivit can't be answered because of Ward 3. Like, obviously it can be answered, but it's so impractical most of the time.
It's so inefficient. Or
like almost impossible.
Yeah.
Like maybe a deck like makes a bunch of burst mana, but it can't do that in a way that it can also pay for the ward or something like that. Like, it's just hard, right? Similarly, a deck like Kinnan, that card is very obviously like just as powerful as Tivit, but it has no mana cost. It's just like, it's effectively free for all intents and purposes, and the card itself makes a lot of mana, which means that it doesn't matter how many times you answer it. The deck just keeps making more mana because of the commander, which means that you could just keep throwing the commander out there until
you eventually
kill it. Yeah, until it sticks around for like however long you need to win the game, or you can sit on it and wait, and then just deploy it and immediately win the game. So like that type of stuff is what makes the cards problematic as commanders. I think you can look back on CEDH history and see similar stuff with Narset and Lightning Master, whereas like that card is
true.
Absolutely nuts. And it was straight up hexproof. Like, you just couldn't, it had first strike. You just couldn't answer the card. Sure, it had to attack, but you couldn't kill it because it was a 3-2 with first strike. And
also hexproof. Not seeing another turn.
Yeah, exactly. Like, when it lands, it's going to swing immediately because it somehow gets haste. And then it's going to proc and the flips are going to kill you. So it's like that type of stuff. The inability to respond to these cards that makes things really hard like for the format to accommodate for, or at least respond in any meaningful way. I think Sisse like walks the line really closely, whereas like once again, that's another deck that wants to just make a bunch of mana, and it has a very low cost commander. Mm-hmm. That said, that commander also has additional conditions stapled onto its ability, which means that it's like it's much more balanced, mm-hmm, than say Tivit or Kinnan. And in that regard, like even though it gives you the five color identity, it's like it's still miles more fair.
True,
at least in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I would 100% agree. I would say Sisse is substantially more balanced in terms of the text printed on the card, but also insofar as Sisse does have a natural, like, enemy. Like, it has, like, it has something that it folds to that is omnipresent in the format. Like, it loses to opposition agents.
Yes.
And I think is the part that's the balance to the scale, so to speak. If this is the flexibility era, the flexibility era is only able to live because these counters exist and are omnipresent. Sisse is allowed. I'm fine with Sisse and Tutor decks existing because Opposition Agent, because of Avid Mind Sensor, because of Ashiok, because there are these sideboard cards that I can put into my deck that are also flexible and are otherwise just good enough that I'm fine with these decks existing. Because that's going to, say it with me now, it's going to make the cat and the mouse game. Let's go. But no, like straight up, like, and that's the part where like that's what Tivit's missing. And that's because I think, to answer my own question, I'm totally fine with decks doing whatever. I think at a certain point when everyone is playing deck that functionally every card reads do whatever the hell you want, you're going to see some insane shit. You're going to see player skill come through. You're going to see outplays. You're going to see over things. You're going to see under things. You're going to see the right amount of things. Like, you're going to, that's when the game gets insane. That's when the game gets wild. When everyone's able to do whatever the fuck they want, that's when the game gets crazy. But we gotta put safety rails on the cliff so people don't fall over. We can have fun. Please wear your helmet, or please make sure like the first aid station is fully stocked, if that makes sense.
You have to keep your side of the ride at all times.
Yeah, exactly. Like, man, we're gonna go through 100 loop-de-loops, but there is absolutely going to be safety rests in place. Mark my fucking words. They will not come off. But you can have fun. And I think that's where a lot of my meta discussion is always going to come back to. Like, even if we like stick to like, you know, like Sax Turbo Midrange, it exists. It's going to exist. I think we're always going to see these things ebb and flow and change. But I think, man, just bring Hull Breacher back into the format at this point. Like, I'm, but I don't want to see Hull Breacher, because making untapped treasures for card draws, extra card draws, is just toxic in a different way.
Let me go back to my favorite deck.
Oh, Opus Thief, yeah.
Opus Thief.
Yeah.
I just want to turn one wheel people's hands away and make a bunch of mana doing it. That's all I'm looking for.
I just want to win the game off of wheel, guys. It's not a big deal.
I just want to win the game off of Winds of Change.
Off of Winds of Change. Oh my god. Yeah, we're always going to see things evolve and change. We're always going to retread the old ground. I think that's just inevitable part of an Eternal format, and I think that makes Eternal formats very fun. People are able to do busted crazy stuff, or only able to do the busted crazy stuff for so long because we have, like, these natural outs, these natural predators to these things. I you mentioned, like, if Tivit gets placed on the ban list, I think that sends a massive warning signal to everything, because it's one of those cards that doesn't outright read, your opponents cannot win the game, or it's not so otherworld, like, otherwise, like, all-encompassing like Flash, that the messaging gets weird on it. The messaging gets weird. The messaging becomes Splinter Twin, right?
Splinter Twin, there was a very valid reason.
There was a very valid reason for it to be banned, but I would argue that that also sent a lot of signals.
Yeah, it was that we don't want 60% of our metagame being identical.
I guess. Okay, maybe Splinter Twin was a bad example to pull from, but like, it's
it would be a weird thing to see on the quarterly ban announcement that Tivit gets banned. It's just like, well, why?
Oh,
does,
yeah.
There's no reason for it.
There's
zero
be
chance
banned.
That it happens. Yeah.
Let's not even put that out there, because there's no way that Tivit gets banned.
No.
And it shouldn't be banned. And if it were for whatever reason to get banned, like, the format's collapsing and players should probably start looking for a different
game. I think that's the conclusion I was looking for, is like, that's a catastrophic notion is what it is.
That said, we in a year and a half we will be able to put ad cards into our decks, and when you top deck one, you'll be able to make the other three players at your table watch 1 minute and 30 seconds worth of ads, and when you do, you'll be able to generate 3 mana and draw 2 cards.
I think that's the worst thing you've ever said to me. I think
just
that
wait.
I think that wait, right there coming. is the stinkiest thing I've ever heard in my
you're
life.
You're gonna watch a player top deck off their turn, and then they're gonna make you watch a video promoting the next Call of Duty Modern Warfare. Not for Magic the Gathering.
Not
it's
for
not
Magic the Gathering.
It's not even gonna
be for Magic. It's not even.
They're just gonna be making you watch a video that's like, it's gonna be like a QR code and be like, all right, guys, watch this ad. And it's gonna play it, and then it's gonna read you an effect, and you're like, all right, I get to draw 2 cards, and for each opponent who groaned during this video, make 1 treasure.
Hey guys, I'm playing the TikTok NPC commander. I'm gonna it has a background enchantment that's just Subway Surfers. It's just gonna be going the entire time.
They're reading you those Reddit posts of just like this is. Am I the asshole? Just like cringeworthy stuff as Subway Surfers goes in the background.
Okay. This has been Mana on the Rocks. I'm dying.
Oh. I'll sign out for Joe. This has been Mana on the Rocks. Thanks for listening. Catch you next time.